Welcome to The Danger Room, a Marvel Crisis Protocol podcast focused on helping you to prepare for the opponents you are yet to face. We discuss strategy, tips, tricks, and things you should be considering to level up your gameplay. You can continue the conversation with us on our free Discord, and if you've been enjoying our podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you're in a position to do so. Links will be in the show notes. This is a competitive-focused podcast, so bear in mind that our opinions are focused through that lens. Regular members include Jacob, Sploosh, Mike, and Chewy.
Hello, welcome back to another week of The Danger Room. This time I have Sploosh with me. How you doing?
Hello.
And we have the return of Dizzard.
What's up? What is up?
He's back.
The OG of The Danger Room right here.
Yeah, I should have improvised my best British accent, and then it would just be the original three.
Opportunity missed.
Yeah. Okay, so we are here. So Sploosh has been wanting to talk about hobby stuff. LVO is next week. We've all been kind of deep in the brew tank and don't really want to talk about it a ton. Sorry, listeners. But next week's episode will be like a predictions that we'll record it like on Friday or something, and it'll be pre-LVO, and we'll see if we were right or not. Could just be wrong what we are thinking. So, But we're going to talk about hobby stuff. As competitive gamers, some events have hobby requirements like LVO and Adepticon. Your team, your list has to be painted. And we thought it would be a cool idea to just kind of round table talk about how we go from like a sprue to like a finish mini. Maybe we all learn something from each other, and you might be like, oh, cool, that's an interesting way that I didn't realize you did that, and that's more efficient, so I'm going to do that now.
For me personally, I paint way more when I have an event to go to. I remember back pre-COVID for a brief moment, I was very active going to game stores, so I painted a lot more aggressively because I was excited to use my new mini going to a store. But then things slowed down, and so did my painting, because like that's just my personality, is the hype of like using the mini. And when I don't have that, and maybe I'm just playing on TTS, I'm a lot slower to paint things, even if I own it forever. I mean, for example, I've owned Star-Lord since the day he came out, and I just painted him like a month ago. and let me just say too, why is that? Because if I don't think I'm going to play it, I don't want to paint it. Even if I should paint it and I have time to paint it, I still don't. It's just my motivation, you know?
Oh, so you're taking the Star-Lord to LVO then?
Maybe.
Oh.
Or at least I had considered it. How about that?
You said you just painted him, so that would mean and imply. Or you're just trying to throw everybody off.
It's possible. It's all about the mind games, dude. Podcast mind games, Mike. Gonna do an episode.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But so we're gonna outline this for the listener as we just purchased something for Marvel Crisis Protocol. We're unboxing it right now. You know, we should have had some like sound for like the, what is it, the is it ASM, the people make videos and they just make crackling noises and pop.
ASMR.
Yes. We should have ASMR'd the listeners.
I tried opening the box on the mic, but the mic is too good and didn't pick it up.
Too much noise cancellation.
Yeah. My noise cancellation is broken, but anyway, so we opened it and we got sprues to deal with. I think I'll just say what I do. And if you guys want to correct me, but I got some like starter kit, like, army painter, like clips and like a little blade. I got on like a starter kit and just I clip them all out, and then Dizzard is probably the most experienced painter here, correct? You know, maybe I'm wrong, but I think you're supposed to like sandpaper the sprues after you clip, but so I never do.
you don't want to sandpaper them because then you're just going to destroy everything. But they make these little,
it's like a file.
You can get files. You can get files, but they have like disposable files where you can buy a crap ton of them off of Amazon. They're like these little flimsy, basically filing sticks, and you can use those. Those work really good for the MCP plastic.
That's okay. What I use. Yeah, they're so, like these little like, they're like thinner than a pencil, and they have varying degrees of like roughness, if you will. I can't think of the word, but yeah, I'll just like clip them with the hobby trimmers off the sprue, and then if there's like a leftover piece that's like protruding on a part of the model that's like gonna be not like inside internally, like glued away, I'll just stand away, smooth it out.
Okay, so my trick is I just use the little blade thing.
It's really thick. You can use the X-Acto knife.
Is it like box cutters? I don't know, but the little blade that comes in the starter kit. I do this
X-Acto knife. The only issue with that is like you potentially leave a big gouge.
Yes. So, it might be delusional, but I feel like I've done at this point hundreds of minis, and I've probably messed up like twice. And even when you mess up, as long as you're careful, it's not that bad.
Then you just primer all over it, and you just hide it. You know.
Well, that's the thing too, right? If I like slightly overcut, first of all, let's be honest, these things are really tiny, and to the human eye, most people probably never see even the most minor little oops. But yeah, then you just prime it over it, and you could even like, I don't know, paint a little thicker in that spot or whatever. It rarely matters. And like, I'm sure if AMG was here, they would tell us that they try to put the sprues in places where no one will see it anyway. So a lot of this, and that's actually a whole topic in itself of how much do you obsess over things people will never see. But I think probably most of us obsess over places that no human will look at way more than we should. But usually those sprue points are kind of hidden anyway. So if I'm not cutting it perfectly, probably no one will ever notice but me, you know. But anyway, that's how I do it. I'm kind of lazy, I guess. I don't know. But I just got the two tools, and it's like clip, cut, and I kind of just try to keep that little assembly lined. And also, if I don't do it quickly, I'll forget where the sprues were, and then I'm like constantly spinning the thing. Like, where the hell was that little extra sprue that I need to like cut, you know? Is it just me? Maybe I'm just a lazy cutter, but I pretty much always have to clean up that little extra almost on every single piece. But I can be a little obsessive compulsive, so maybe it's just me. And I just find my cuts are never perfect ever.
Yeah, I mean, you try to use the flat end. Like the hobby trimmers have like a flat side.
Yeah.
You point that towards the model.
Yeah, I do that. But maybe my cutters suck. I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes there's a little piece left, right? And you just sand it.
It's just a tiny, tiny little micro fraction, right? And I just take the blade and I just kind of swipe it off.
Well, I will say, if anybody is not using like actual true hobby clippers, be super careful because those are actually completely angled. Like if you like look at your hobby clippers or your clippers in general, like what Mike was saying is they should absolutely have like a pure flat side. If they're not like that, then they're not true like hobby clippers. And you could probably go spend $6 and get a much neater pair, even from Michael's or Hobby Lobby or something.
Yeah, I got those stupid ass army painter clippers. Maybe I might look into buying another one, see if it's a big difference or not. It just, again, we're talking such a minor little difference that maybe it's just me. But anyway, yeah,
it's so funny when I started getting into like painting minis and doing the whole modeling thing. The guy that sat in the cube next to me at my old job at the time, he saw me like looking at some stuff on my computer, and he's like, "Oh, bro, do you paint minis?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Oh, dude, let me help you out." He just like gave me this list of all the stuff that he uses, and it's been perfect for me ever since.
Well, I think our goal will be today on this episode to try to hit out some of the products we enjoy. So let's just say we finished clipping. We made everything nice and flat. We got to glue stuff together. I'm just going to say I was told to get some of the Tamiya, this extra thin cement.
Tamiya, yeah.
Yeah, Tamiya. And after using it, I'm pretty much sold that I'll never glue with anything else when it comes to at least this game and this plastic, because it's particular to the plastic. Like I know old school Legion stuff was like a different plastic, and I don't think it would work.
Is that like stuff you're talking about come out of? Does you have to like brush it on or no?
Yeah,
it comes with like a little brush. Yeah,
yeah.
It's like ultra thin though, and because it's like I believe a plastic glue. Right, it's not like a super glue.
Oh yeah, no, it's you're melting the plastic together.
Yeah, you're melting the plastic, but it's so thin that it doesn't just like destroy the plastic if you kind of overuse it. Yeah. And then obviously I'll kind of wipe it if I, you know, accidentally overdo it. But the brush is like perfectly tiny, and it's just so thin that you don't even know the glue is there once you use it. Now, the only bad thing is you would need like a super glue when you're dealing with the base, because I guess the bases are a different plastic. Because I learned this the hard way, that I tried using this Tamiya stuff for the like connecting the mini to the base, and then it will kind of stay a little bit, probably because the plastic of the mini is kind of melting to the base, but it's not the base melting to the mini. So then inevitably they would always fall off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I use like a Model Master liquid cement, which is exactly what you're talking about for assembling the mini. But yeah, I'll super glue them to the base. I've never had.
Yeah, super glue is way too stressful to use, in my opinion, like connecting the minis together.
Yeah, don't do that. You want like what Dizzard said, where they melt the pieces together.
Yeah, and I mean, super glue is prone to like. Oops, I like glued my finger to the mini and then like the arm rips off. And then like I'm explaining this because no one explained this to me. And there's got to be one listener out there that's like doing this way wrong.
You're like, wow, I never realized. Yeah. So be sure when you're buying your super glue or your plastic glue that for MCP, you buy both because you need the super glue to glue it to the base, like Sploosh said, and you need plastic glue to actually put the model together.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll leave it at that pretty much, but trust me, plastic glue is just god tier. Like, it's just like everything you want in your mind glue to be. Like, you swipe it on, like, say his like armpit, and you just jam that arm in. You wait, what, like 10 seconds at most, and then boom, the arm's just like attached. And yeah, then you have to learn the timing a little bit. Like, I will, like, put the, like, torso and the arm down and give it, like, maybe a minute to, like, settle down. And I'll try to be, like, not aggressive with the connection points until I feel like, you know, it's had a moment to kind of solidify. And I think, I mean, you guys might know better. Like, how long does it take the plastic glue to really be done?
But I think it recommends 24 hours for it's, like, fully set. But, like, you're good to go, like... within like you're not painting probably that day anyways because you got a prime and the prime set.
Yeah,
but it's like you can easily put them all together and prime it that same day and be fine.
Yeah, exactly. You can feel like the pieces are a little like unstable until like a day later or something, and then it feels like it's solidified.
So I'm glad you guys said that because I just have like wacko mini building voodoo magic in my head where I don't ever paint the same day. I'll prime it that day and then just kind of leave it for an entire day, even though I imagine prime really only takes like an hour to get dry. But in my mind, I'm banned from like anything else. Like I do the prime and that's my day.
Well, to be completely honest, you shouldn't prime the same day that you paint or glue. Yeah. Because the glue is off-gassing. Like, it's going to off-gas. Oh. If you seal it together with the prime, then it has potential to mess up your prime job. But most of the time, it doesn't matter that much, like, with how much glue you're using. But if anybody has ever, like, glued a model and then primed it, like, within the first, like, hour of doing that and gotten a weird prime job, that's probably why you got a weird prime job.
Yeah, that's a good tip. I'm never, like, in a rush to prime because often, like, I'm usually building minis like right after work or sometimes even during work. And then I leave them off until like, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of like a very relaxed, like not feeling rushed kind of painter. Like, you know, like if I, first of all, building them is very satisfying, but then I like set them to the side. I've never like rushed, like, oh my God, you know, like I finished gluing, now I gotta like run to the primer. So, but that's a good thing to know. Like, just don't do that. Don't prime right away. So, 'cause that makes sense. Like, 'cause there's gotta be some chemical reactions going on when you're melting glue and plastic together, you know? That's the whole point of it. And then
my question to you is, the next step after that is, do you fill gaps?
I don't.
I have none, no.
Yeah.
I got a magic trick for you guys here then. So like, let's look back to your Hulk or your Venom back in the early days.
Lately, Rhino.
Yeah.
Rhino's got a ton of gaps in him.
But the best thing you could do to fix these gaps is you take this Tamiya glue and you put it on like a piece of parchment paper. And then, or some people like literally take an old bottle of Tamiya glue that they've like almost used up. And then you take the extra bits of your sprue and you cut it up into tiny little pieces. And then you put it in with the Tamiya and like shake it up and basically let it dissolve a little bit. And then you start to brush that over the crack. And what happens is the glue melts the plastic of the sprue and it uses the same plastic that the model's made of to literally fill in the gap. And it's like Spoon said, it's so thin that it doesn't make a raise or anything like that. It's like probably the best way to fill gaps is using, I forget what they call it.
I think it's basically sprue glue.
Yeah, sprue goo. But it's basically what you're doing, and it fills gaps magically. If you don't want to spend the time to do that, what I used to do is I would take a varnish, and after I got done gluing, before I primed, I would basically put a varnish over it, and that would kind of make a layer over the gap, and then when you prime it, it covers up the gap. But the sprue goo is more, it's better for like the bigger gaps. The varnish and then prime is good for tiny gaps where it's just like the seams, like that's, it's good for that. But like gaps on like Venom's shoulders, I had a big gap on mine, and the sprue goo is like good for that.
So can you explain to me again, like how do you cut up the sprues to fill the gap? Is like, are you thinking about like the width of the sprue plastic?
Oh, no. You literally just, you just cut up little tiny pieces of sprue and then dump it in the bottle or in a mixture of Tamiya glue and stir it up or shake it up, and it melts the sprue and it makes it goo. And then you just like brush it off.
Oh, it literally is like this like gooey, like putty like substance or something.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. I do have a second bottle that's kind of like I've noticed, because this glue lasts for like eternity, but when I got like probably 60% empty on the bottle, maybe or so, I feel like the solution's not quite as good anymore, because probably me constantly dabbing it, it slowly added like a micro amount of like plastic to the overall solution. And I think it's just hard to explain. I feel like the consistency is not like there of like a fresh brand new bottle. And keep in mind, I've been using this glue now for probably like 3 years at least. So, I mean, it's like 3 years of like tiny bits of plastic probably getting into the glue. That's at least what I think is happening. Otherwise, I think I've also heard, maybe you know something about this, that glue can just get old. Have you heard that before? People just have trouble, you know, because glue like expires or whatever.
Yeah, it'll start to lose like its effectiveness, that's for sure.
So it is possible my glue just expired. And another thing is, you don't know when you buy glue from like Amazon, which that's what I did. Amazon could have been sitting on it for like a year or something, you know, just unsold, you know. So you don't know it, but your glue's older than you think it is. But anyway, all right. So, yeah, then I super glue to the base almost always. I guess I don't want to sit on this too long, but do you guys always build your minis, or is there a rule to not build fully the mini?
Yeah, I do sub-assembly a lot, depending on the mini. Like,
especially with MCP.
Yeah, like for example, like Rhino, I am not going to do any of that. I'll just put them all together and paint them as a complete thing.
But Mr. Sinister.
Yeah, Sinister, God help you if you glued the cape on before you painted
him. I did. I still haven't even painted him, so that's how much I played him. But I hopefully will someday.
But like as an example, I've been playing Hydro a lot lately, but I've been getting into Hydro, and my my Red Skull is in like three pieces. My Zola is in like, he's like in a bunch of different pieces because like you have to paint his face first and then you got to like glue them together and like prime the clear body and all that stuff. And then like my Hydra Grunts are like not even glued to the base because I plan on like painting them separately and like having them all glued on the base would be annoying to like get around to like the backside of each of them. So,
okay. So, yeah. I mean, basically, if you look at the mini in the box or something, you're like, I think I can paint this without doing some kind of brush gymnastics. You just kind of build it.
Yeah. Usually it's when I'm putting it together. When I'm putting it together, like I'll dry fit the piece and then I'll be like, it'll be like, oh, this might be like weird to get into the back of it. Like, Sorcerer Supreme Strange was a good one. Like I had him in, like his body was one piece, his cape was another, and then the portal and the base were another. I painted them all separate, and then I glued it together when I was done. Because so like
just another good example, like the Rock and the Kitty and Malekith himself.
Yes. Yeah, at least in like Strange's case, it would. I knew it was going to be a pain in the butt to like paint inside the portal with his foot like sticking out of it and painting under the cape. I don't love painting under capes with, I'd rather just have them be disconnected, like glue them later.
Yeah. I think the worst part about that is you're like painting the cape and then you're like accidentally hitting his back. And now
exactly.
The colors are getting all messed up and just like, ugh. The thing that keeps me sane with the building them and then later, maybe like not being super happy with the results of some of what I've done is that like, who the hell is going to see that like little crevice? You know, like how visible is it like actually to see
it's not the
inner cape?
It's just on, like my neurosis.
Yeah. That's the part I have to constantly yell at myself, like stop worrying about this. Or you've literally spent 20 minutes painting like under a foot that literally no one will ever see, you know, like, because like maybe that foot's in such a weird angle that like there's a cape and something blocking, you know. You get my point is like I have to constantly correct myself and say, stop it. Like you're doing this for no reason.
Yeah.
I've learned that actually from the AMG streams. Mad respect to those guys. Like they're like super hardcore painters and they constantly repeat like paint what people are going to see. And you know, when they the first few times they did it, I was like, yeah, obviously. Or honestly, I would defiantly think in my head, like, no way, that's lame. Like, no, paint because it has to look awesome and in every way. And like, I'm going to like rotate it and see those mistakes. But then like over time, I've realized like, no, they're just right. Like, especially if you're doing tabletop standard, sure, I'll paint. I like 100%. I paint places that probably no one will literally ever see because that's just me. But I will like, I'll measure myself. Like, don't waste time on this. Like, I'll spend like, you know, whatever, 5 minutes, but don't spend like 30 minutes because it's such an awkward angle, you know? So at least it looks okay. And maybe it's just me, but psychologically, if there's some paint on it, maybe this is a hang up. If there's no paint on a part of the mini, that for some reason like freaks me out. Even though maybe it's literally like a place where even the brush can't reach because like it's in some dark corner, you know. But I do like to at least have like paint everywhere. But I'll try to measure how much effort I put into that, you know, and whatever.
I don't know, do you paint sub-assemblies?
Most of the time, yeah. I used to not, and then I got to the point where I was like, why do I keep doing this to myself? And then I just thought of what I was doing when like I'd be like, okay, Sinister has a cape. I am not putting this together. And I had to catch myself when I'm gluing because I'm so used to gluing just everything all up and being like, we're good to go. And it's like Sinister, I was just like, yeah, let's not glue the bottom part to the model. Like his cape is like probably like the best example of like where sub-assembly finally clicked with me. Where I was like, okay, I've been painting for like what, like, oh, I don't know, like 15 years, and I never did sub-assembly until Sinister.
Wow. Yeah. I have done a few sub-assemblies like where it just looks like a nightmare. Like Doctor Strange is one I did as well. But when you build it, you can kind of see with your eyes, like what your eyes are drawn to. And, you know, another tip the NGB guys always say is like, put the most effort where your eyes are going to go. And like, so like if it's someone's feet and it's just the way the mini is like arranged that you're just not really ever going to look at the feet. Like maybe it's like the fifth thing you look at, like maybe do some effort, right? But you don't have to like obsess over their feet when like people are going to be looking at their face and their shoulders and their shield or whatever, you know? So it is a good painting tip to keep your sanity. But anyway, all right. So we've built the thing, or I guess maybe you guys want to explain, how do you prepare, like when you're going to prime, do you stick them to something, especially because you're doing these like sub, let's pretend you're doing a subassembly. How do you subassemble prime something?
Yeah, I have like, I have multiple like hobby handles, if you will. Like I've got the small and large GW ones that I have like spring loaded. But usually I have this other one that has, it's like a handle and it has like the top part that the model connects to spins, and you can screw like bottle caps onto it, like a 2 liter pot, like a soda bottle cap. And that way you can like swap out minis and things you're working on without like touching the mini. And I'll like connect whatever I'm working on to it with either double side tape, or I should get some putty as well, like blue tack.
Tack's great. So I'm lazy with my priming. I will literally just lay down a parchment paper and then just prime. I'm also a terrible person, and I airbrush prime in the house without a mask on.
I do that, but I have a vented hood that I just like spray into.
Yeah, I have like at least like it's mostly like somewhat ventilated. But like in all reality, like you should be wearing a mask and a vented hood, just like absolutely, like you don't want that particulate in you, but whatever. But it's like, if you have not started like airbrush priming, it's worth like what? Like you can get a cheap compressor and a cheap airbrush just for airbrush priming for probably less than $100, and it's so worth the investment. It saves so much time, and you don't have to worry about what the weather looks like. You don't have to worry about like the space really it takes up, because you can set it up real quickly. And then if it's just a cheap brush for priming, then you don't really care about the cleaning up as much. Sure, you want to clean it, but you're not going to like go super in depth with your cleaning. But airbrush priming has changed the game, in my opinion. Even if you are scared of it or something, like it's basically the same thing as rattle can priming, except for there's way less factors and it's way cheaper, to be honest. Because you spend what, like $20 for a rattle can every what, 2-3 months maybe?
No, mine lasts longer than that, but
mine lasts a long
I guess I buy a lot of models, so like there was a point where I was buying a new can of primer like once a month.
Holy crap.
I played a lot of games.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that's like, just
point, an MC. Even without rattle like, cans, it's like less waste too, right?
Yeah, because like with like the airbrush priming, you buy like a bottle of Steinel Res, and I've had the same bottle of Steinel Res black primer for the past like 5 years.
Yeah, lasts forever.
Yeah, like it's
so airbrushes actually saves on efficiency. I always thought it'd be almost inefficient. No. How does it like pull from the paint? Like I thought you had to like, I don't know. You guys can explain it to me. How does that work? Where you're efficient?
Yeah, the stuff Dizzer's talking about, you literally just put it in the airbrush and spray it on the model. It's primer.
Yeah,
but how do you put it in the airbrush? Like you're dumping it and like
there's a cup that you feed paint into the airbrush with it.
Get a gravity fed if you haven't bought one yet and you're looking into it. Get a gravity fed airbrush.
But like, isn't there inevitably like extra paint being applied to the airbrush than what you actually needed? Yeah,
but then more often than not, at first when you're getting used to it and how much you need, sure. But most of the time, you can like you're talking about less than an ounce of paint.
Yeah.
When you get like a bottle of Steinel Res for like $10, and like I said, it's lasted me like 5 years.
So I'll just say my system's probably not something you'd want to copy, but it works for me. Is I've just got a bunch of random like pencils, and then I use I don't even know what I bought, but it's some kind of like I have something called Milliput, but I don't think that's actually I use that. But, no, I use that, and I put like a ball of it on the top of like the pencil, and then it like sits under the mini, so that way I can prime it without any impediment, and it sticks to it. And then I have like a little like bin, and I just like put the pencil at the bottom of the bin, and it kind of leans against the tip of like the wall of the bin, and that way it dries. And then obviously like I don't want to get paint on myself. I could just hold the bottom of the pencil and then spin it and like turn it and just paint like prime.
I'm gonna save you some money here. Get blue tack, because do the exact same thing with blue tack except for it's reusable.
No, I might have some blue tack, but I have something else. It's like this, like actually the color of like a pencil. It's like a putty. And well, so I bought that
Milliput, like
dude, Milliput, I bought that stuff like 5 years ago, and I'm still using it. Like it's still sticky. Even when the paint gets on it, I kind of can just like kind of roll it, and it will just kind of, the paint will just kind of like, I don't know, fall off or whatever. And it still maintains its stickiness. Like I've never had a problem with it not being sticky enough or whatever, you know, and it just kind of like sticks to the bottom of the base. And anyway, and even like if I do like a sub assembly, I can just kind of jam like the elbow, like sort of, you know, the unglued part of the arm, and just kind of stick it in the putty, and then I can spin it around and prime it. But anyway, that's the way I've done it. And then I've had to learn to, and I'm a can sprayer, and I buy the stupidly expensive Citadel paint, but it lasts me like half a year or a year. So I only really have been playing MCP. I'm not like you, like a mini maniac or anything. So MCP is not like demanding of your paint. But I do very light spraying, and I'll constantly keep spinning it. And I'll try like the lightest possible amount, where you can see with well lit area, like the discoloration from the gray. I white prime mostly, cause I'm a contrast paint
You're
user.
A madman. Oh, yeah.
Contrast, you have to do white, but I do the white. I do very thin. You can very easily see with white prime the discoloration, and then you can see it like slowly becoming white with like very light spray. And that's probably why I don't use a lot of it. And I've done a pretty good job of having a very thin prime. And I always do it in the basement and in an area where no human will go. And then I immediately evacuate the area and, you know, try not to breathe all the fumes and whatever. And that's pretty much my priming experience and how I hold the mini and all that.
It depends like how like intense I'm getting to the model. If I'm doing like one that I know I'm going to be like working like really good on, like if it's like Logan or Sabretooth, I'm going to like spend a lot more time on them versus someone like Darkstar, where it's just going to be like, okay, whatever. Sure, somebody probably loves Darkstar, but I don't care for the model personally. I don't care for the character, so like I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on it. But I'll put it there, and I'll base coat primer black, and then once that dries, I'll do a layer of gray, and then a layer of white, and just do a like zenithal working up my gradients.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I spray over the top with white after gray, and you get a good zenithal, which helps you shade it later.
I've heard those suggestions, and maybe when we talk about paint, maybe you guys can come back to how that helps you, because I think I paint thick enough, or because of contrast paint, I don't want that to happen.
Contrast paint kind of just does what it wants to do. Like, you have a lot less control over it you gain speed, right?
Yeah, and speed is definitely my goal for all of what we're talking about. But, anyway, we might want to come back to the painting part of it. And it's to maybe help me understand the advantage of doing what you do. I've heard of it too. I've heard of people, they'll prime black and then like do like a white prime on like overhead downwards to create like that natural color changing effect.
Yeah, it's supposed to simulate like a light source, right?
Yeah.
If you have an overhead light source like the sun or something, that's what that's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I respect that. But yeah, anything else on priming? Are we good on that?
Yeah, that's pretty much all of it.
Yeah, I also have tweezers too, by the way, because sometimes, like, I don't know, maybe a hair or some weird piece of sprue will, like, weird whatever, I kind of tweezer it off. And even after priming, I might notice, like, somehow a floating hair got into there or something. Use tweezers for that. But, and then I always wait a day after priming. I don't know if you guys do the same, but
I haven't. I mean, Colorado's so dry that like in a couple hours, it's probably fine to paint on.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me mentally, I build prime and that's my work. And then a paint is a different day. That's just how I look at it. But it's very dry where I am as well, especially. I do my painting in like the basement. If we have a dehumidifier for some reason, it's extra moist, but it's usually not. But anyway, so I guess we should start with painting.
Yeah, I mean, at least on the topic of that, I'll like, yep. I forgot what I was going to say. Never mind.
It'll come back to you. We'll get you.
Well, I guess do you do any prep work after you prime? Like, what do you do?
Nothing.
Not really like, anything.
Okay. So there's, I've been, ever since I went to like, it's kind of a class at Nova, I've been doing more. And it's, I kind of just sent a picture in the chat for you to look at, and you kind of see the process. Like the first picture, nobody else can see this. I guess I can put it in like somewhere where people can go look at. But the first one is the plane model, and then the next one's just a zenithal. And then what I've been doing is go through with black and white and just like lower my shadows with a paintbrush and up my values where I want the highlights to be. And then the bottom one is just pure one coat of skin tone. Like there's nothing else there but just one coat of skin. And like this process takes so much time, but like me getting one coat of skin to look like that is completely changed my opinion of understanding values in painting. And like to me, it's like I won't do skin another way. That's just one coat of skin on top of black and white.
Interesting.
I definitely want to hit the topic of skin because I think there's some things to learn there.
So much fun. But like in essence, like what I do, and this is from Cutthroat Cure, basically something that he's like preaching, is literally like understanding your values and like more defining your light source. Like pick where your light source is. It's terrible at this for the longest time, where I do the zenithal prime. And then as I start getting paint on it, I would basically lose my light sources and my values would be unbalanced and all this. And he said, like, one of the biggest things you can do is literally before you start to paint, really build up, like, make those whitest spots, like, actually white and make the darkest spots literally black and, like, build up your values in that before you even apply color to the model. And then as well, when you're doing this and you start putting paint on it, take a picture of the black and white. And then as you're putting paint onto it, take pictures as you're going and put a black and white filter over it. So that way you can actually see how your values are progressing and where you need to bring up your colors throughout the model as you're painting and applying color. And it'll like make your highlights actually like look good to where they need to be and understanding how far up your highlights need to be able to make it. Because it should look like that first black and white photo as you put color on it.
Interesting. That's pretty cool.
It's cool. It's a process. I definitely don't think ever.
Work, yes.
Yeah, I don't ever think about where my light's coming from unless it's like a fire or like, I don't know, maybe some kind of laser or something. You know, like,
yeah.
I do the very generic OSL, is the word, is it?
Off-source lighting or whatever
it is. Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about this real quick. What do you use for light? Because you said lighting, and I thought you were going to go here. What kind of lighting do you have on your desk? Like,
that's fair.
Yeah. Do you guys use a magnifying glass? What kind of gear do you got to paint in that way? I could just tell you what I have is I bought like one of those little arm things that you can pinch to the table or whatever, and then it bends around. And it's got a magnifying glass and, you know, LED lighting coming out of it.
So I have done multiple different types of lights and sources and magnifying glasses. I've seen multiple things. I think my favorite so far, though, is this little clamp-on light that I have. And it's just a super bright daylight LED type thing. That's like the biggest thing that you always hear people say is get daylight light bulbs for your painting desk. Because like it'll influence your paint job. If you have a warm light, then when you're painting it, it's gonna look too warm. And then when you remove it from the light, you'll be like, oh, my colors are actually extremely dull and cold because I was painting under this warm light. Versus painting under like a cold light is going to be the exact opposite, but under the daylight light bulb, it's like almost like a true color for your thing. It's not influencing your paint job at all. But for the longest time, I used a magnifying glass. And once I started using the magnifying glass, I was like, I can't see myself not painting with a magnifying glass. And then more and more recently, I've actually been painting without it. I also found that the shade of light coming off of the magnifying glass lamp was different than my other light. So it was really messing up like my thing. Like it was like the right tone, but it was just a different shade, I guess. It's weird. But the magnifying glass, I started painting without it, and it's actually become easier somehow. So I'm back and forth on it.
I don't see the point of saying it's bad or good though, because like I probably overly used it when I was newer, but now I don't use it as much. But there's definitely, these minis are so tiny, dude. Like, and there's moments where, like, for example, I was painting like Logan and Sabretooth, and I think it was Sabretooth. I couldn't tell where like his jacket folds and then where the jacket starts and the, like the fur stuff, like, you know, stops. And it's really just the magnifying glass that saves the day, you know, because I'm just like, I can't. Yeah. With my naked eye, I just can't tell where the fur exactly stops, you know.
And I can agree with that.
Yeah, and you stare at their face, you're like, okay, what part of his head is like hair and what part of his head is like skin, you know? And those finer details, I think the magnifying glass is just a lifesaver.
I can agree with that. I do think like there's a time and a place for the magnifying glass, like what you're talking about. But I would use the magnifying glass for the whole entire model. And then like I'd find like I am literally, I would like not realize that I'm trying to like basically chase perfection with like my tone. And like using the magnifying glass on like Zemo's coat, for example, like I'd have one spot and like, wait, this is leather. Like it's okay to have like little changes the tone and texture of the coat.
Yeah.
That's a good, instead of like, instead of being like absolutely flat one color and stuff like that.
I would even say contrast paint is not a magnifying glass thing you want to do too much, because first of all, what you see with contrast isn't the end result, because the paint is designed to kind of like melt, dry in a way that like almost like corrects itself. So if you're like overly staring at it, you're going to obsess over things that really don't matter. The only thing that really matters with contrast paint is like how thick of a like a kind of a pool you've created, and you want to maybe like reduce that thickness. But the magnifying glass will make you like obsessive compulsive in a really unhealthy way. And I totally get what you're saying too, because even when you're not using contrast paint, the magnifying glass will get you to obsess way too much on like a slight discoloration, where like you said, like especially doing Logan and Wolverine or Sabretooth, both of them have their leather jackets. And it's weird, but some things you're painting, the imperfections actually enhance the mini. Like you said, the leather jacket thing was such a good example, because we'll get to it, but like I dry brushed the leather jacket and weirdly, like the sloppier it comes out, like it actually looks better, because like it kind of looks like a worn leather jacket. I was like, but if I was magnifying glassing that, I'd be getting obsessive about, oh, like I see this like discoloration here that needs to be corrected, but actually with the naked eye it looks good, you know. So yeah, what about you, Mike? We haven't heard from you on that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using like airbrush for jackets and such for a little bit, and it comes out like pretty matte, but I like it at least. It comes out really smooth, because like I found that I've started to move to airbrushing like capes and jackets and stuff like that. Like for Sabretooth, I airbrushed his jacket, and Logan, I also airbrushed his jacket as well. I did it for Gambit a while ago. And
What about, do you use a magnifying glass?
Sorry, I missed that. No, I don't. I have pretty good eyesight, at least for now. But when I get older, I will need one.
Okay. Interesting. It's just calling us boomers is what you're doing.
I mean, I got LASIK. I had LASIK done, so I have like really good vision, but I mean, they told me when I reach like middle age, I'll have to have reading glasses again.
Interesting. Okay. Fair enough. And you might just have, like, you have a lot of lighting, like lamps and all that
stuff. Yeah, I have a hobby lamp on my desk that I just shine on, and it's not particularly hard to see. But
okay. All right.
My dad uses a magnifying glass. He's got, like, a big one that's, like, attached to his table. That, like, it's on an arm.
Yeah, that's basically what I have. It has a
light on it as well.
Yep. So I could be your dad. All right. But so I actually want Dizzer to do this, I think, to start. Let's get into actually painting. Like, do you have a strategy, a pregame prep, like grab the paint you're going to use? Like, where are you at with that? Because isn't that like the biggest part is the first paint stroke? Wait, what do you paint first? You know, like the chest or the, you know, the capes or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I'll usually start with the areas that are more recessed. So let's see, Logan is a good example. Like, I would paint his I airbrushed his coat first, but outside of that, I usually will start inward. So, like, you'd start with his shirt first and, like, his jeans, and then work your way outward, because it's harder to, like, if you paint the outside first and then you go inside, it's like hard to not get errors on the areas that were up higher. If you start inward, then you get that how you want it, and then you paint on the raised parts, it's a lot easier to avoid the areas that are recessed than vice versa.
Okay. And you never use contrast ever, huh? You don't even own it?
The only contrast I own is like Apothecary White, which I use very rarely. As far as like my paint collection, I have a lot of like the Vallejo paints, and then I mostly use scale 75. I just bought like the complete kit of that like a long time ago, and it's like every color I would ever want. So I use that for all my stuff. And
maybe we can hit on that's how you've collected your paint. Do you mix paint to create a color?
Not usually. I'm like usually pretty happy with how many shades I have from the collection that I'm like good with that. But to like shade up or down, like to brighten or darken something, I'll mix white or black.
Yeah, for me, the paint I probably, especially early on, I went through the most was white, because my strategy was like, all right, I painted blah, 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 his jacket or something, this color, and I want to like lighten it up. So now I'll just add some white to it and then just do like some highlights.
And I'll say now, to be completely honest, that's not what you want to do.
Yeah.
To be completely honest, like when you're looking at like colors and stuff like that, adding white or black to darken or brighten your colors actually takes away a lot of the volume of your color and your tone. What you want to be doing is, let's say I have like brown and I want to make it a brighter brown, I just add yellow to it. Or if I want to make it darker, add like a purple.
Okay, yeah. So that's definitely better. I'll try that next time. I haven't, my color theory is not very good.
So like the biggest issue when you add white and black is like what, like white's like
it's gonna desaturate it, is what you're saying, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So then you end up like, yes, it's still like gets you the darker color. So like what I'll typically do is I'll have like my wet palette or whatever I'm using, and I'll have like my base color, and then I got from Cutthroat was you have your base color, and then you just go ahead and go down to the darkest point you're gonna wanna go, and then up to the brightest point you're gonna wanna go. And just have your spread values basically across your palette for that color. And that way you can kind of just like dip into your paint as you go and make, okay, I'm doing the underside now, so I'm going to make this part a little bit darker. I'm doing the upside now, go right into it instead of trying to like do it on the fly. And you can kind of like, and that way if you pull from your like your pool of values color, you know it's going to look good and it's going to match the color you're already working with because it's made off of that color.
So, Dizzard, you just finished priming, and it's a day later, you're going to paint. You have done no painting. What do you have any rules of thumb as far as, like, what do you paint first? Like, how do you choose the colors? Anything?
Um, I First, I put music on.
I actually do podcasts. That's a good call out, is that I listen to a lot of podcasts while painting. My favorite is actually sometimes podcasts that aren't even talking about anything like high depth, like strategy, more like just like I actually used to love the one Sooner used to be on that doesn't exist anymore.
Turn Zero.
Yeah, Turn Zero was my favorite because it really felt like you were in the local game store just listening to people just talk.
Yeah.
It didn't even matter what they were talking about. Just had that feeling of like being in a community setting. And I would bang out like all their episodes just while painting. But anyway, that's a good shout. For you, it's music.
Put something on. But yeah, I'll put music on. Then like I'll typically try to find like some sort of reference picture. Like something similar to the outfit the character's wearing. So like MCP, I'll try and find whatever time period like they're going for with the costume. And then that way I have an idea of like where colors go where. And if I want to change anything at all, like, okay, I like the way the comic looks with this outfit better than what like the box art looks. And I'll pull that up and kind of like get all the colors out I'll be using for the model. And then I use a wet palette now. So I'll just get my wet palette set up and then just start with base coating. Just, I like to go with my, I guess your big colors first, like the majority, and get the base coat down, and then I'll save skin for last. I'll typically do like the base coat for my skin before I get into that stuff. I typically save like the fine tuning of the skin tone until like very last.
Yeah, I always do skin last too. Mostly I do. I like to pick the color that's going to be like the like a large amount of the mini. Like we should just keep using Logan since we all painted Logan recently, but like I did his jacket and like his pants first, just because it's like that makes up most of his body.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just psychological, but when you're painting and you've painted already, let's say like 40% of the whole mini, you feel like you've accomplished something. Where if I was like obsessing over some complex area of his body that's not even that big, I'd feel like I just spent like 20 minutes and how much have I even done? But since I'm a contrast paint user, I have to strategize what's going to – I don't do 100% contrast paint. I really don't think anyone should, but I wouldn't say you shouldn't if like I get it. If someone's just like all in on contrast paint, then that's like just a mindset that person's in. Because probably they're just trying to get done as fast as possible, and they're not worried about like the finer details. They're basically like the bare bones of tabletop standard, which is fine, right? And that's I was at that place. In fact, I used to be happy if I reached tabletop standard at one point, but I'd like to think I've evolved beyond that a little bit to the point where now for people that don't know what contrast paint is, it's a line of paint that like kind of like shades itself like by design.
It's like a paint and a wash combined.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's like a new oil or whatever wash combined. And I got to say, if you've never used contrast paint, there's something about you don't have to keep your brush that wet because the paint itself is a wash. It's kind of moist or like, I don't know, oily or whatever chemical they're using. But it paints really easy and smooth. And it almost is, it's like a wash. Like you're just kind of brushing broadly and crazy like a crazy man because it just kind of like takes care of everything for you. And all you have to worry about is it pools because it's like a wash pools as well. You got to make sure to clean up the pools a little bit so it doesn't like create this big kind of blobby mess.
Yeah, it gets really splotchy.
Yeah, so the concept is it's a color and then it's adding like the shader like sort of gradual, let's say black to grays to color kind of feeling, so it creates depth. So for that to function though, the paint needs like a bumpy surface. If it's just like a flat surface, the paint won't really have anywhere to like gather, and it will just randomly have pools that make no sense and not look very good. So strategically, if you're going to kind of integrate this contrast with like regular paint, there's two things you got to think about. One is the surface bumpy enough to really utilize this paint? And two, contrast paint sucks if you make mistakes because I said earlier I use white primer. The reason is because like the paint kind of needs like a like a blank canvas, and then it will create its colorations and stuff. But if you, like, let's say you're using two different contrast paints, one's like, say, blue and one's like yellow, and then you accidentally paint over where the it's going to be yellow, but you haven't painted yellow yet, there's now blue on your yellow area. And then when you paint the yellow, it's going to, it's like, you, it's transparent. So you're going to like see through the yellow to the blue, and it's going to, and maybe even combine to make some other color, but it's going to be horrible and also really difficult to fix. Like, one of the only ways to really fix that kind of mistake is to paint the mistake area white again, and then wait till it dries. Like, you got to be really patient because contrast paint's kind of moist. So like, you really don't want to like rush it. And then like, now the white paint's like mixing with, and like, cause it's not dry yet. Right. So you have to be very deliberate with the contrast paint as to making sure you don't like paint over the lines, you know, and make mistakes. So what I'll do though is, let's say like Wolverine's got like a belt, and I'm going to contrast like his pants, and it's like connecting to the belt. I can make a little bit of mistakes around the belt if I plan on using regular paint, because the regular paint will just paint over it anyway. But if I plan on using another contrast paint for the belt, now I have to be like more careful around the belt, because I don't want to have to, you really don't want to keep adding layers to your mini, because it's going to start getting thick and gross and not having the distinctions you need. But anyway, so I have to really tactically think about my mini is like what I'm going to, I'll always contrast first, because you can fix the mistakes with the contrast with your regular paints is the point I'm making. And then also, you're thinking about where you're going to use it and then what contrast paint you own. And I haven't said this, but I didn't do what Mike did, which is like buy a big set. I had like a starter kit, which, you know, I don't know. The starter kits are like maybe 12 colors or something. Like the very basic colors. And when I was poor and cheap, I did the white mixing that Dizzard says not to do. But every time I would buy a new mini, I would look on Facebook. I don't do that anymore, but back in the day, people on Facebook would either answer the question of what color paint did you use, or even tell you what they used. And I would probably purchase that paint, or if I didn't own it already, or a similar paint color. And that usually meant I'd buy like, say, like one, maybe two colors per mini for over the course of like 5 years. And the next thing you know, you have all the colors you need. And then now I basically never have to buy paint anymore. And I have a combination of some contrast and some not. And because I've used them all, I know now like what contrasts work, what don't, what that contrast can do, like the limitations of the contrast paint. And I think you would, for a person that's not trying to be like professional, I would strongly recommend contrast paint. I just think you will have growing pains with it, and you'll definitely use it when you maybe you shouldn't. But then eventually you'll learn the strengths and weaknesses. And maybe I'm going to, I don't know if you guys want to add something, but I'm going to try to segue a tiny bit. Is to, let's pretend we just did like one coat of paint on this mini. And so like for example, Dizzard, you just mentioned the skin, you'll just do the base skin color. But obviously I know you're implying that you're going to go back to the skin and add the shading and all that. Maybe we can do the skin as a topic. And if I jump past something, we can back up a little. But I want to just throw it out there that for me personally and my skill level, I've learned that I think you should think of your mini as like three possible colors. There's the base color, then there's like sort of the shading color, which would be like the, is it recesses is the word? I don't know. That would be like the darker part of the base. And then there's like the four, like jeans, you would do like a light blue on like the part of the jean that's like poking out, you know? So there's like close, base, and then like shadowy. I'm probably using horrible terms, but that's the way I look at it, as like the extent of my painting. And like, for example, even on a nose, the nose would be skin color. And then I would add like a lighter color of the skin, like on the tip of the nose, to kind of add like a difference in color.
I mean, like what you're talking about is like the core concept of like your basically your base shadow light or highlight. But like, what happens in between is really the real question. Is like, do you go back and like blend it all together, or do you just have next like almost hard line? I guess it's contrast. It's not like as easy to get the hard lines. But like, there's like, I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. Like, there's a lot of times where when you start doing this and you start realizing like, okay, my transition from my highlight to my base color to my shade is very, very noticeable. It's not like a natural transition. Do you ever come across that, or is it end up just working out?
Well, so I can cheat a little bit, right? So if I do contrast jeans, then the contrast itself is kind of doing all three. That's the point of contrast.
Yeah.
But I think it's not like, it's a little, it's good enough, but I think very easily you can fix it with, what I will do is, let's say we're doing jeans on Logan. I do like this blue contrast. I let it dry, and then I dry brush the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look at it, and if it's like I made any like mistakes on dry brushing, I might go back and try to fix that a little bit, but I don't go too crazy on it. And I've gotten pretty good at dry brushing where I don't make that many mistakes anymore. And I do think with the naked eye, sometimes the mistakes actually look good at the right distance. And if you're not like looking through the magnifying glass and you're literally just looking at it with your eyes, if it looks good, stop, you know?
That's the other thing, is like using the magnifying, back to the magnifying glass. I think using a magnifying glass really like leads to you chasing perfection, which ends up ruining something.
Agreed. And in real life, like if someone has a worn pair of jeans, it's not like perfect either. Like,
yeah,
some parts are just a little more white than others, you know?
But like back to the,
That's how I do it on the jean example. And I like the outcome. We can like on the skin, I've watched videos and we can, I don't want to get into that part, but on that part, I will try blending a little bit more, but on like what, the example I gave, I won't try too hard to like blend it. But that's also the material.
Yes. That's huge. Like jeans, you just dry brush and it looks like nice and faded. But like on like a hard surface for like metal, let's say, like you almost want like hard edges and that transition to be rough. But like what I typically do is, say jeans, I'll do like the base coat, and I like dry brushing in certain spots. Jeans, I love dry brushing, like leather, I love dry brushing. And then once I get that highlight, like I'll do like, a super highlight, I guess what you say, like I'll overimpose the brightness, and then I'll go over with a glaze, and that really ties it all together. So like basically the consistency of a contrast paint where it's like super thin, almost like a wash, of like a midtone between the bright and the dark, and that basically brings the brightness down a little bit and really blends all the colors together nicely.
Yeah, and I have done a few times, I know I did this with my Winter Soldier, where I almost like created my own contrast paint, because I did just do like a base color, and it was a lighter color pants than I wanted it to be, but I did it on purpose because I planned on, this is going to be like a sin for some people, but I knew oiled over it after. And I know like it's kind of a meme where like people overdo the null oil, but because I had planned to do it before I even started, I felt it came out really nice, where I almost like even applied it more aggressively than I normally would, because it really did like dull the color when it was done, and it created like very drastic shading. And I probably could have, maybe I even did a little bit, dry brush it.
Yeah.
And like, that's not definitely one thing I want to just get across, is I've like really fallen in love with dry brushing like highlights instead of painting highlights. I used to, and I still do sometimes, especially like, I think Dormammu was a good example. I used to paint the highlights because he's so big and he's got that cape that's so like aggressive. But dry brushing highlights really looks good and it's so fast. That's another thing, is like it's super efficient to do, because like you've pretty much finished your mini, you just grab like a light color, you blop the dry brush into it, you wipe it really aggressively, and then when it's barely showing any color, you just do that dry brush on the parts of the mini that are sticking out. And AMG does this on purpose. They'll tell you in their interviews, like, they design minis with these, with this on purpose, so people can dry brush and like create this like texture. And I feel like that's like, I'm still probably tabletop standard, but I feel like these kind of little quick things, like put the mini above a normal, like just randomly contrasted mini or just a one base coat mini, you know? And the amount of effort I'm putting in is very minimal. Yeah. So I don't know. It sounds to me like Dizzard, you take it the little extra mile. Like, so I'm saying there's like a highlight, a base, and a shadow kind of thing going on. And you're doing like a little bit extra highlight, or like the highlight a little bit, you know?
Yeah, basically. I sometimes I feel like it hurts because like I push a little too far and then I got to clean up the mess a little bit. But like most of the time it's very much just like get the base coat down and then do a quick highlight and then do the shadows and then do an even brighter highlight and then glaze it all together. So it all like actually melds together. It's not like having harsh transitions. And then do like the top highlights of like everything, like with like a fine tuned brush.
Yeah. I was kind of joking. I think I'm pretty sure I'd said this off air, but if you watch a Sarastro video, this is where I learned the obsessiveness of it all is, he's good about doing like, say like 40 minutes of his YouTube video showing like tabletop standard, which is gorgeous. And then he's like, yeah, so the rest of this video is like 60% to go is just me being me and being a god tier painter and spending hours on like a highlight. Yeah. And obviously people can do that, but it all comes down to how much free time you have and how much passion for those details. And you know, you look at Sarastro's work when he's done, and of course you're just like, that is magnificent. But for me personally, and he even says in his video, he's like, most people will stop here and that's fine. And that everything you're describing and more is basically that Sarastro like extra
at points
step. Yeah. Which, you know, more power to people that have that ability and free time. But, you know, as for me personally, I play a lot of these games because I enjoy the gameplay more than the painting hobby.
I think, but that's there like is, where I was for the longest time was like I'd spend more time playing the game because I bought those miniatures to play a game. And then like as I've gotten older, it's very much like I enjoy relaxing and painting.
I've definitely gotten a respect for the hobby. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Like it's hard not to when you put this much time and effort into something. And one of the greatest tips of all time is if you're happy with the mini, then it's good enough, which I think when you're new, you're never happy, but you're probably never happy for all the wrong reasons. And then as you get more experience, you start to hopefully one thing is just get better at the painting part, you know, just skill wise. And this actually brings up maybe another thing I'm thinking about. Where are you at with paint brushes? Like, I always need one brush that's like ultra thin, like
you don't need a double zero. You don't need a zero. You can literally do everything with a one and a two.
I've seen people say that.
It's all about the tip. If the tip is nice and to a point, you want a nice fine tip and a nice full body. And you can do everything with a one or a two. I've even started using sixes on my painting.
Yeah, Dizzer's right about that. I use a two for everything nowadays. Like I even paint eyes with a two.
Well, how often do you replace your brush then? Because if you've been using the same brush for like 5 months at least.
It depends how much you paint. Like if you're only painting, let's say, two models a month, you're probably good for that brush to last you a year at least. Yeah. But you also need to be cleaning your brushes and conditioning them with brush soap.
Correct, yeah. They die quickly if you don't do that.
So my problem is my normal brush that I use, and I agree with you mostly. I use one brush for like everything. But the tip gets a little mangled and just not quite perfect. And if I try to use it for some of those, like trying to cram the brush between like two points, you know, like, I don't know, like a shoulder and an arm, and you're trying to get like the armpit. And if I try to like, I just can't cram that brush in there or get that little spot.
So that's where you use like an older brush and you do that first before. Cause if that's, let's say that's supposed to be like under the armpit, that's a dark spot. So I'm going to use my darkest color with a crappy brush that I don't use that often and get that first. I'm never going to touch it again once I get that dark layer in there.
So that's an element of planning I never think about because I have my little tiny brush. The little tiny brush is my cheat code, I guess. And I'll use
like,
the tiny
I won't lie. Like I still use the tiny ones like from time to time, but like I would say like 95% of the time I'm using a one or a two, and more often than not, it's a two.
Yeah, I don't know what numbers they are, but I assume that I'm doing the exact same thing, actually. But I do use the tiny probably on every single job, at least for something. Like Mike was saying, eyes or something. I don't know.
Well, I use a number two for eyes, which is
like I know, but I don't. Yeah, I'm not that.
I've been painting
brave.
Eyes since I started painting minis because I like my first mini. Like I was like, man, am I gonna paint eyes? Like it felt like it was missing something without the eyes, and I just bit the bullet. And I've been painting eyes for years now, and I've gotten pretty okay at it.
Certain models I don't like putting eyes on, like Wolverine and Sabretooth. I don't put eyes on them because they're feral. I just make.
I guess. White. I mean, I put eyes on my Sabretooth, and he looks pretty sweet. So
I like to do the cheek thing where, like Storm. I just did white.
Yeah, it depends on the mini. Like from a Storm, it makes sense. Like her eyes are white, like all the time.
But I get so excited when I paint Storm or a character like Storm because I'm like, yes, I don't have to do like an actual eye.
Yeah, like someone like Luke Cage, like you can't do that for him.
No, he needs eyes. He looks weird without him.
Yeah, he does.
I don't know if my Luke Cage even has eyes, to be honest. I dance around with this. With Wolverine and Sabretooth, I think I both just did the lazy contrast shader. Let me just say this. I always base my skin with regular skin color. But I watched a video that teaches you how to you do base contrast over the base because the contrast paint sells two really good skin products. And all that really does basically is add a shading to the skin. And then I highlight it. And then you're supposed to, after you do the really, really light colored skin. And when I say two, it's because I have coloring for black and for white people. And then if it's Asian or something, I don't know. I try to figure it out. But so then I do a little highlight, and then I will try to do what you were saying, Dizzard. You water down the base, and then you try to do a blending of the all of it. And if it's done really well, it looks great. And that's literally the extent of any effort on anything I've ever done, because that's a lot of work. Because it's
ask for eyes. Do you guys do your eyeballs with white, or do you use something else?
So I'll black the eye socket, and then I'll use a off-white.
So a trick that I picked up was use the brightest skin highlight you're using, because then it won't throw off the skin tone.
Neat.
I actually have that too.
Yeah, because if you use white, it actually throws off the skin tone. And if you use the brightest skin tone, which is really next to white anyways, it's not throwing off the skin tone, and you can't even tell it's not white because everything else is so dark.
How do you get the brightest skin tone?
Whatever your highest highlight.
You have. I see.
Okay. Yeah, your highest highlight for the skin.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. Well,
I mean, you don't use Citadel, but I believe... Citadel uses Cadian flesh tone or something, and then the middle is Kislev flesh, and then the super light is Screaming Skull, and I use those three shades. The super light one I almost never use, but that tip with the eyes might be the moment for me to start using the Screaming Skull.
I use Monument paints, and it's the same thing. There's the dark one or your base, and then the middle, then the next one up, and then it's got a pale pink, and I use that for my eyeballs.
Yeah, and the contrast colors are Ghulamin flesh and Dark Oath flesh, and they're literally just two. It's basically black and white. It's basically what they are. But that's the extent of my depth, but I just try to shoot for the three colorations for everything as much as I can without obsessing over it too much. Yeah. I don't know. Anything else on like painting that? Because like, I think we covered a lot.
Stealing your models.
Oh, well, hold on. There's one other paint thing I do that is a new trick I picked up like probably a year or something ago. Is for a while, and I hate that I didn't do this, but I never did the black around the base.
Annoying. I definitely
like,
did that.
Like yeah.
And then I realized, I started doing it and I liked it. But then I bought a paint specifically just for that job.
I used black ink for mine.
I bought something called a Gloss Black Negro Brilliant or something. It's Vallejo. And it's kind of like a – it's almost like – in fact, the bottle actually says primer on it. So as you know, primer paint, I feel like – maybe it's my imagination though, but it's like more durable – I guess. I don't know, but think about it, because your hand is probably touching that area the most, right? I mean, and so it's kind of a watery paint, so I'll sometimes have to do two coats, which I almost never do two coats of anything, but with this I will. And I paint around the border, and then like you were going to say there, Desert, you got to seal it, right?
Yeah. So for my borders, I just use black ink because it's the same thing. It's a thicker paint and it works really, really well. And it never rubs off. So, but yeah, then sealing, I guess biggest tips with sealing is make sure your models, like, do it like a day after you paint it. Don't seal it the same day.
Yeah.
And then don't do it when it's super humid or your paint job will just be trashed.
And what product do you use for sealing?
I typically just use Army Paint or matte varnish.
Matte varnish. I use something called Testers spray lacquer or something, which
Testers is good, but it's so expensive. Like, it's like $15 for a half a bottle.
It's so tiny, but I do get it to last a long time. But again, I'm not deep into the miniing like you are, I guess.
Yeah.
Apparently, Testers is actually like banned in some parts of Europe.
Yeah.
So some of our European listeners can't even buy it. But I only literally the only reason I use it is because a guy who kind of like Mike was saying earlier, like this dude who just knows how to paint just told me you should do it. His advice to me was two super light coats. I think he said like 8 hours, but I just do like one day, a super light coat. And I wait till the next day. I do a super light coat and then I wait another day and then it's done. I just spray it really lightly, like, and I try to make sure the base is, like, especially the black part of the base, I try to make sure that gets it, because if we're being honest, like, that's the part that probably needs it the most, because I try to touch the base more than the mini as much as possible. But
I think another good tip is if you want to take pictures of your model, take it before you varnish it, because it'll dull your colors.
That's an interesting tip. It's true though. Sometimes after varnishing, I get a little annoyed. Like, oh man, I feel like that was better before.
There's some people like that used to, I don't know if anybody does this anymore, but like my dad's one who showed me how to paint everything, like got me into when I was a kid. But, the people go through and after you varnish it is hit your top highlights again. But that's like above and beyond. And I don't even do that.
I would be nervous that's just going to like almost like chip off anyway. It's kind of like the whole reason you're varnishing in the first place. Like if you don't varnish your mini, you're asking for a lot of trouble. Like they'll get scratched and like the paint will like come off basically.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's why you varnish. Right. And I've never had a problem with a mini being like damaged after varnishing it.
Nah. It's just, which leads us to storage.
I want to throw out one
shout out. I've been using the Munitorium varnish from GW.
It's good.
Yeah, I really like it. It was recommended to me by one of my locals who has been painting for a long time.
And you just varnish it once and you're done?
Yeah, it's just a rattle can. You just spray it and it's done. It's like, I'd say it's like pretty matte. It's like maybe there's like a little bit of shine, but it's not that big of a deal. I actually kind of like how it looks. So,
yeah, I actually got a what I think is a bad batch of testers, which I'm such a moron. I keep it around and I actually use it by accident recently, but it comes up super glossy for some reason. And I'm like, why? I literally think it's a bad batch, but it shouldn't come glossy if you got the right product, mm-hmm. right? It should look like it was just painted, you know? Yeah, go ahead.
No, nothing. Go. I was just going to move on.
Well, yeah. So some products I wanted to shout out is one thing I've done very little of, but little micro pencil or micro pen like things. Sometimes those things are like a nice little cheat to get like some black in an area or like highlight an area. I haven't done it in a long time, but I still own them and I have.
Oh, you're talking about like an acrylic pen.
They're called like Micron.
I own one.
Yeah, Sakura or something is the company. They're Pigma Micron. It's archival ink or something, but they're like these insanely tiny pens that you'd be surprised. They actually clean up a mini pretty well if you're trying to get like a black and like a border or a corner or something. And it seems weird, but like it works. Like on a mini, if you kind of pen on it and then of course put our like coating on it, it will stay forever. It's not like it's gonna like fall off or something. Like it's just a cool little product. There's another thing I own called Technical Ard Coat. After I do the lacquer stuff on it, I've done this a few times where something on the mini needs to be shiny. For example, I did it on Venom's tongue. So like his tongue is like colored nice and it's got all different colored pinks. But then I put this Ard Coat on after the lacquer and it just makes his tongue a little shiny and it looks like saliva. I did it on like Loki's staff. He's got like a little globe on his staff and I made the staff look kind of like cloudy and then put this over it like a light coat and it just makes that look like a glass ball. I did it on Mysterio's helmet. So his helmet has like this like glass shine to it. It's just a cool little thing. I'm really like when it works, it looks awesome. And it's just like anything that needs to kind of be shiny. So that's just kind of a cool little thing I've done that I wanted to share with people. Then I don't know if we magnetize stuff. I think all of us do.
Yeah, we are unofficially sponsored by Ace Case.
Ace Case, yeah.
No, we're not, but we all...
No.
I don't know if Dizzard has one, but...
I still don't have one.
Okay. I know
I want one, but I forget about it.
Pretty sure Chewy has one.
Yep.
Deaton has one.
And we've gotten many others.
Omnis has one.
Yeah.
Tons of people have Ace Cases, and it's so funny. They ship from Poland, but they arrive in like 3 days. Like, it's weird. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand how they get here so fast.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't wait long for mine. Greatest purchase of my life. Basically, it's just a nice sort of like mini little suitcase like thing that's like metal, and so it has trays, and you can magnetize your stuff to it. And I put it underneath the air seat in an airplane, and it's like not even a carry on. It's just like my handbag.
Yeah, it counts like a personal item on the flight.
Yeah,
just put it under the seat or like next to your feet or something, and nobody will mess with it, and it's all good.
Yeah, I bought my 8-case for Legion, and it fit like two armies pretty comfortably. But with MCP, you could fit like probably like three lists in an 8-case, unless like Malekith's one of them.
Yeah, yeah, like the old Avengers list. If you're playing like Hulk, Juggernaut, Malekith, you could fit like two.
Yeah, it fits Dormammu. It fits Malekith. Yeah. Like, granted, I think
Sentinel Prime is too tall. I know Hulkbuster fits. I think Prime might be too tall for two shelves in the small model.
Yeah, you could probably get away with like one shelf, right? I mean, it's not like couldn't fit the rest of your team in there anyway. Also, I don't know about yours, but I have like the old version of it, and so like all of it's metal. So I've literally put things like vertically in my A case.
You can put it on the walls and on the top.
Yeah, like with Magneto's. Little constructs, I just jam them right into the wall in the back, and it's fine, you know.
It's thematic, but, even in the case.
So with magnets, I use super glue. And I give it at least, like, definitely give that a day before you try to actually use the magnet, because it's really important that that glue is as strong as possible. And I was told by Ghost Deer, shout out to him in the community, which magnets to buy. And so basically medium and small bases can use the same magnet, but large bases need a different magnet. And these magnets that I use fit perfectly. I'll just shout out the measurements, but like, I don't know. I got them for what I swear, like $2 to $5 on Amazon. It's like literally like 100 or 300. So it's very affordable. One of them is like refrigerator magnet, says 5 by 1 millimeter, 100 pieces. And then that I believe is for the large bases. And then for the medium and small, it says like MB6 × 2 millimeters, 300 pieces. And I swear to you, they're like perfect.
Some of the larger bases, like Hulk, or I think another one would be like Groot or something, where you kind of need like a thin magnet, which is your 1 millimeter thickness, and then the normal small base model, or like custom bases like Juggernaut or something, you can use a 2 millimeter thickness.
Yeah, on the large bases, I'll put easily 2 magnets also.
Yeah, I think my Hulk has like 5 1-millimeter magnets on him.
Like, it's not even because like they don't work, but like, why would you risk for the price of another extra magnet or whatever? You know,
Diz, how do you store your stuff?
Yeah,
I have an old battle foam bag.
Okay, so you're using foam. Okay,
yeah, which I need to get a magnet one, because like, you don't realize this, when you put your models in foam, you're essentially rubbing them against sandpaper. Like,
yeah,
you could really ruin your paint job by putting, like, storing them in foam. It's not the best, but it works.
Well, biggest problem for foam for me is like, mostly the foam has to fit to the mini, but like, minis are shaped differently every time, you know? So
yeah,
when I was playing Legion, I bought like 3 or something foam cases. And then they came out with this like giant ass tank that's literally the size of the entire case. And now keep in mind, I was like traveling for tournaments, literally, like, you know, like we're going to Vegas. I live in Massachusetts, right? I'm getting on an airplane. Like, I can't carry around these freaking foam cases everywhere, you know? And I don't know. It was a nightmare. And then I found a case, and it was expensive, but my God, is it the greatest purchase of my life? And now all I have to worry about is some magnets. And everything else just works itself out.
Speaking of magnets, I apply them in my assembly phase. Like when I'm building the mini, before I even prime it, I'll put the magnets on.
Oh, really? I just wait. It doesn't matter that much to me, but
I just don't want to be messing with like glue and stuff after it's painted, you know?
Yeah, it can be a little weird. My trick with the magnets is I flip the thing upside down. I put the magnet inside the base, like in the corner, and I just drop like a bit of glue in the middle and then kind of slide the magnet into the glue. And then I'll even sometimes leave my mini upside down for a day.
I do that as well. Yeah. I'll like hang in between two cups. Just yep. Let it sit there.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think anything is more of a nightmare than the idea of a magnet failing you. Like that's, so I am very particular about making sure.
It failed me before. It's not a huge deal. Like,
well, if I'm on an airplane and my mini's rattling around, yeah, or I mean,
but like if you, so even if the magnet fails, the MCP bases have like a lip, so like the mini won't move outside the magnet, right? It'll like slide around with the magnet under it.
I guess
unless you're like really crazy with your bag and you're like, you know, being kind of loose with it, which I'm not. But
I mean, I don't like shake my bag around, but I you know, like I have the AKs like sideways sometimes, so the mini would just fall.
Yeah, I try not to.
Like I've never had a mini. Okay, so here's the thing: I've never had a magnet fail while I was using a case. However, I've had, it's not common, but I think because of like a humid summer, and this is less of an issue because I have like more air conditioning. But like, you know, that's a whole different story. But where I live in Massachusetts, you didn't need air conditioning year round or even at all that often. But I never store my minis using the magnet. I keep them on a shelf. And then when I need the mini, I just put them in the case. And that, to me, that I learned to do that because a friend of mine, he kept everything using the magnets, like stored on trays. And he would be like, sometimes I'd be sleeping at night and I would just hear this noise. And because his magnets probably weren't like, not that mine are, but they, you know, they're not touching the metal, right? So yeah. You just hear that little snap sound.
Yep.
And that like story sent shivers down my spine. I was like, I don't ever want to deal with like my magnets failing, like when I'm actually using the magnet, which, like I said, is basically when I'm on an airplane or something. So I definitely am very obsessive with like making sure the magnet's well glued and like has time to dry and all that stuff. And even having extra magnets is another good reason to have extra magnets, right? Like if one magnet fails, probably the other one won't. So anyway, but yeah, highly recommend magnetizing. Because it's affordable, right? Like, I can hear an argument of, well, I got to buy a bunch of magnets. Well, you can get hundreds on Amazon. So
yeah, you just get Chinese magnets that are basically don't cost anything.
Yeah.
What else? Is that it?
That might be it, honestly. I think we talked about a lot. Left?
Diz?
No, I think that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I will just say on priming, I do own a few other primer colors. Like you can't, especially if you're not planning on contrasting, but like if I'm gonna, mostly for terrain, if like a terrain is like a lot of metal, I'll just prime in like a metallic color. It's mostly terrain. I've had terrain, like I was doing like I did like the construction yard and I bought like that like construction orange color. It cost like $2 to $5 at like Home Depot. I just bought like, I mean, it says primer on the thing, but whatever, it's some industrial paint or whatever. And then just spray it on the terrain and then just shade it, color it, whatever, add some metal scratches and stuff. And it's easy. Took me like no time at all. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a good trick.
Cool. All right. I think we're kind of going there. So I guess, listeners, thank you for listening. Next week, or the next 2 weeks, should be LVO content. So that's exciting. I'm ready to talk about how I lost my first round.
As tradition goes, you can't have it any other way.
Oh yeah.
Even if you're winning, you have to throw the game because you.
Well, if it's against me, then I'm going to insist upon it.
I'm undefeated against our group so far, so I'm on the docket to lose.
Wow, sure. This guy. Well, saying that, I hope karma hits your ass hard.
Yeah, I'm not saying that from an ego standpoint. That's just what has. I've been lucky enough to win our games. Like, I mean, I got lucky against you. Like. The voodoo thing, and then Deaton's left my Hulk on one and it cost him the game.
playing Avengers, huh?
You also beat me at NashCon, where literally we had a judge to measure if your lockjaw could even fit. With
that, it came down to a 50-50.
Yeah, and it was literally a roll to decide the game. I mean, coin flip. I've
just been on the luck side of all of it, so I'm sure my luck will run out at some point, but yeah,
this should be, in theory, the most difficult in-person event in MCP history.
Yeah, up to this point, yeah, for sure.
And you can say what you want, but when everyone there has won something, that has to have some meaning, right?
Yeah.
So I'm definitely not going expecting to just crush everyone. I hope I do, but I'm not expecting it. So
yeah, it's interesting. It's like an unknown meta, and I'm just going to be playing wacky stuff. There's going to be a lot of like, a lot of games are going to be a hot mess.
Yeah. Oh, and this is a good reminder. I need to go print out the official stuff. You know, I haven't even printed out my objectives. The crises. Yeah.
I have a feeling like a lot of games are going to be like, you might be wondering how I got in this situation.
Oh man, it's going to be crazy. Hopefully we'll have some good war stories.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. All right. Dizzard, thank you for coming back. It was great to have you. Listeners, see you next time.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to our thoughts on the game. As the game changes, the information in this episode may become less relevant, so bear that in mind if you're listening from the future. We also want to thank Discount Games Inc. and Blackgate Games. If you don't have a local game store and they can't get what you're looking for, check out those guys. They'll sort you out. Finally, a big thank you to Atomic Mass Games for making such an awesome game. We'll see you next time in the Danger Room. Simulation complete.